Okay, so we're learning the 16th Perek of Sefer Shoftim, Perek Tes Zayin. And the first half of the Perek we learned last week, which discussed Shimshon's marriage to Delilah, right, as she's called in the Tanakh, and basically her attempts, several attempts, at trying to uncover the secret of his strength, what allows him to be so strong and mighty. Of course, this was at the behest and at the bribery, I should say, of the Plishtim. And she tries, and he says one thing, and then turns out that wasn't really it, and says another thing that wasn't really it. And then we ended last week, Pasuk, let's just read the last couple of Pesukim again. Pasuk Yudzayin Vayagidlas Kolibo, that finally he tells her the truth, right? Literally what's in his heart, everything that's in his heart. Vayomer la mora lo ala aroshi ki nezira lokim ani mi betani mi. That a razor never came upon my head, right? I never got a haircut since I was a little child from my mother's womb. Im gulachti v'sarmi meni kochi. If you shave me, if you give me a haircut, so then my strength will disappear. V'chalisi v'chayisi k'chol adam. And I'll become weak, sick, and weak like every other person. V'atere delila pasak yirches ki higidla es kolibo. So Delilah sees that he's telling her the truth. And we said different interpretations, either because when a person tells the truth, you see it. Right? You can recognize when a person tells the truth. Nikarim divrei emes is one approach, and the other approach is that he used the Shem Hashem, ki nizira lokim, ani mi bet ani mi. So since he used the Shem Hashem, so she knew that he was telling the truth, and she saw he had long hair, so he was a Nazir. They saw all the pieces fit together. Vatishlach, vatikra lasarne plishtim lemor. So she calls the officers of the Plishtim, and she says to them, "Alu hapam ki higid li esko libo, that now's your time to come up, to come out of hiding. He finally told me everything that's in his heart." They come up and they give her the money, and now we're up to pasuk yutes, which is what we're beginning with this week. Vatiashnehu al birkeha. So she calls them up, but now she has to do the deed. Right, so she puts him to sleep. Vatiashnehu liashen. She puts him to sleep on her lap. Vatikra laish, and she calls a man. Rashi says this is the messenger of the Sarne Plishtim. She calls him. He's the royal barber or something. Vategalach es sheva machlefos rosho, and she cuts the seven strands of his hair. Either she cuts it. Again, different interpretations here. It says vategalach, which implies that that she cut it. But the Radak says maybe either she cut it herself, she just took the scissors from the other fellow, or maybe she called him and she instructed him to cut, and he really cut. Question exactly what, who did the cutting. But she cut, nonetheless, either way, she cut his hair. Vatochel le'anosa. And she began to oppress him. Vayosar kocho me'alav, and his strength dissipated. His strength left him. The Radak points out that even though here it says clearly in the pasuk that she put him to sleep, really in all the cases before he was sleeping, right? And again, it only says that in one of the earlier cases he woke up from his sleep. But the Radak understands that really in all these cases, he fell asleep. She put him to sleep, and then she tied him up with the different ropes and strands that we learned about last week. And then he broke free when he woke up, and she told him that the Plishtim were upon him. the Metzudas David says that when the pasuk says at the end "Vatochel la'anoso," right, that she began to oppress him. So Metzudas David said there was no greater affliction or oppression now that she did than otherwise. But it means that now he was in a position to be afflicted. Right, now that he was in a weakened state because he was he had his hair cut. He was in a weakened state, so now he was in a position to be afflicted. That's not tochel la'anosah. That now he's ripe, so to speak, for the affliction of the plishtim, for the oppression of the plishtim, as we're going to see in a moment. I saw on the bottom of the art scroll they quote the Rav Avram ben Arama, very interesting comment. And Rav Avram ben Arama, I'm not sure where it's printed, but he asks, he says, what's this connection between the hair and the strength? right? What is this, like some sort of magical connection that that Shimshon, you know, his strength is tied to his hair. You cut his hair, he becomes weak. You know, what's this all about? And if that's the case, asks Rav Avraham ben Arambam, then every Nazir should have, you know, superhuman strength like Shimshon. Every Nazir has long hair, right? Every Nazir has long hair. Right? And for that matter, you know, Havdil, you have all these other Meshugayim in the world walking around with long hair. You know, maybe they should also have superhuman strength.
But so they're not a Nazir for life. They're only a Nazir for
okay.
days.
So you're saying maybe it's because he was a Nazir for life. Yeah. What does it have to do with the hair, though? Like, what's the connection between the strength and the hair? So he suggests, and he says that there's no real connection between the hair and the strength. Right? This strength, this superhuman strength that Shimshon had, was a gift from Hashem. Hashem gave him a gift in order to be able to take revenge upon the Plishtim for all the oppression and torture and persecution that they gave to the Jewish people. Right? So that's really what it was. It was a gift from Hashem. But that gift from Hashem was dependent on his total devotion to Hashem. When Shimshon was totally devoted to Hashem, so then Hashem gave him this present. He gave him this special strength. That's what he gave him. Right? So it was dependent on his total devotion to Hashem. That devotion was symbolized by his long hair. Because since he was a Nazir, and he had this long hair as a sign of his Nazirus, that Nazirus was a symbol of his total, utter dedication to Hashem. When he was totally, utterly, utterly dedicated to Hashem, then he had this gift of superhuman strength. When she cut his hair, it wasn't a magical, you know, sequence. He cut his hair, his strength dissipates. When she cut his hair, that symbolized his weakening, the weakening of his connection to Hashem. The weakening of his dedication to Hashem. That over time, it began to eat away. And as we saw it through these two prakim that discuss Shimshon, we saw that, you know, he lets sometimes his Yetzer Hara get the best of him. And he goes after the Plishti women. Right? And Delilah is no exception to that. She herself was Plishti. We learned last week at the beginning of the parak, maybe she didn't even convert. Right? He just, he took her as is. No, without even converting. So we find that his connection to Hashem is beginning to wane. His dedication, his soul and utter dedication to Hashem is beginning to wane. That's what the cutting of the hair symbolized. The cutting of the hair was symbolic. It symbolized the weakening of his connection to Hashem. Once that connection to Hashem was weakened, so now this superhuman strength that was a gift from Hashem, that superhuman strength dissipated. Right? So that gives us a little more insight as to what's happening here. This isn't just a magical thing that he has long hair and therefore he's strong. No, the long hair is demonstrative of his connection to Hashem, and that's where his source. That's the source of his strength. That's really where the strength comes from.
Question.
Yeah.
This thing about the oppression.
Yes.
And the affliction. Doesn't that really imply some sort of physical pain?
Yes.
Or hardship?
Yes.
That doesn't seem to be.
Stay tuned. Two psukim, you'll see it.
Okay.
That's why it says that. That's why the Mitzvah stuff it says this pasuk doesn't mean that the physical affliction has begun, but it means that now he's in a position. Now, because of his weakened state, he's in a position where he's susceptible to that physical, you know, affliction, which we're about to read. Mm. Okay. Yeah.
It says she called for the man, singular.
Mm-hmm. Apparently this was some fellow that it was, you know, maybe he was, again, he was, the Rashi says he was the messenger of the Sarni Plishtim, he was the barber, you know, he was the one who had, who was going to cut the hair, you know, again, and then the question is, did he cut it, did she cut it, you know, it's not so clear in the pasuk, either he cut it, or he gave her the scissors and she cut it, and, you know, and whatever the case is, but, okay, pasuk chaf, Vatomer Plishtim, I'm sorry, Vatomer Plishtim Alecha Shimshon. So again, he's sleeping, she cuts his hair, and now she does the same thing that she's done all these other trials, all these other times. And she yells in his ear, Shimshon, the Plishtim are here. So what does he do? Vayikatz mishnaso. He immediately wakes from his sleep. Vayomer, and he says, Eitei kipam b'fam v'ino er. He says, I'm going to go out. You know, he like wakes up in a rage. He's going to go out, and he's going to tear the Plishtim apart. V'hu lo yada ki Hashem sar me'alov. But he didn't realize when he first woke up. He woke up, he had the same reaction that he always wakes, you know, wake when you wake up and you hear the Plishtim are here, you know, he wakes up ready for battle. So that's how he woke up. But he didn't realize that he didn't realize that Hashem wasn't with him. The Radak says, you know, he tried to get up with that same strength that he always did. And, you know, the Radak says, what's going on? You know, he told her, that this is the source of his strength. So did he not remember what he told her? That he told her this is the source of my strength, and if you shave my head, then I won't be strong anymore. So he says either you have to say he forgot that he told her, you know, maybe he was kind of half drifting, you know, half asleep when he told her, and then he fell asleep and he forgot what he told her, or he remembered, but he remembered what he told her. He sees that his head has been shaven, but he thinks, you know what, maybe Hashem will still be with me. Maybe Hashem will still help me. And that's what the pasuk says, "V'hu lo yada ki Hashem sar me'alav." But he didn't realize, no, Hashem left him. Hashem's not going to help him. Right? Hashem's not going to help him. By the way, this last approach of the Radak works very nicely with the comment of Rav Avraham ben Aramba. Right? That, again, the source of the strength is not the hair. The hair is symbolic. So he thinks, okay, I don't have my hair, but maybe Hashem will still, you know, be with me and give me that strength. Pasuk says, no, v'hu lo yada ki Hashem sar me'alav, Hashem left him.
So according to this, the reason Hashem left him was because he told Delilah.
So I don't know if the reason why Hashem left him is because he told her.
The other, I mean, if you're saying that, yeah, that she didn't convert and Hashem was angry, mm-hmm, he was still able to defeat the Plishtim.
You're saying why all of a sudden?
Right.
Why all of a sudden? Right. So, okay, good. It's a good question. Why all of a sudden? Meaning why not as soon as he married her slept with her, as soon as that happened, he should have lost his strength. So why all of a sudden now? Good question. So maybe you're right. Maybe there is a connection between his revealing and what happens. Maybe you can explain it that the more he's revealing to her, why is he revealing this to her? It's because of his Yetzer Hara, right? It's because he wants to be with her. So he's, you know, revealing. He's spilling the beans. He's telling her, you know, everything. He's telling her a little too much, and that he's again letting the Yetzer Hara get ahead of him. And maybe that's the reason. That's good. That's a good point. That's a great question. I have no idea. Where is that pasuk chaf? Vayikatz. I don't know. That's a good question.
Is it a different translation?
I don't think so. I think it's the same idea. Why two yuds there? I have no idea. Good question. I don't think I ever would have noticed that.
Here in my prose, yeah, it says, Das Sofrim says that the reason it has only one yud here in this pasuk is because he didn't awake fully. It was only a partial awakening.
Very nice. Good. I asked the question. Good. Okay. Good question. And good answer.
Two yuds, one yud.
In this pasuk chaf, there's only one yud. Vayikatz. Vayikatz.
Should there be two?
So in Pasuk Yudalit, it's the same word spelled with two.
Right.
So we have the answer to Das Sofer.
Right.
Good Kasha, good Teretz. Baruch Hashem, this is collaborative, this is great. Amazing. Okay. So now, so Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayochazuhu Plishtim. So he's trying to get up. He doesn't have the same strength. The Plishtim all converge. Remember, she called them. So they were waiting. Right? They were waiting. They see he doesn't have the same strength, and they converge. Vayenakru es enov. And they immediately, they grab him and they gouge out his eyes. Vayoridu oso azasa. So they take him, right? They bring him down to Aza. Vayasruhu banechushtayim. And they chain him up with these iron chains. They throw him into jail. He's chained up, and he's tochein. Literally, Rad Rashi and the Radak say, you know, they subjected him to hard labor, and they had a lot of wheat to grind, and they brought it in and they say, grind. That's what he did all day. All day he stood by the mill and he just ground, you know, wheat, ground grain all day, involved in this hard labor. Very good, very good. So why his eyes? So the Mishnah actually tells us in Maseches Sota, this is the Mishnah in the beginning, there's a whole Gemara that talks about Shimshon, Darshan's many of the Psukim. So the Mishnah says, Shimshon, this is on Daf Tesamud Beis, Shimshon halach achar einov, Shimshon strayed after his eyes, right? He kept going after these Plishti women, lefichach nakru plishtim es einov. That's why, when the Plishtim punished him, mida keneged mida, Right? Hashem arranged it so that they would punish him by gouging out his eye. Shneimar vayochzu plishnu vayinakaris enav. Exactly. And not only that, but the Mefarshim say that that the reason why they took him down to Aza, right? The reason why, Rashi says it right here, the reason why they took him down to Aza, and he's quoting the Gemara also, is that since he started, his mistake began in Aza, if you remember, back in the beginning of the last parak, where he met that first Plishti woman, that was in Aza, where he went down to Aza. So here too, his downfall began in Aza, so that's where his downfall concludes. His downfall begins with his eyes, and that's where his downfall concludes with his eyes. Just very interesting that the Radak mentions as an aside that this idea of subjecting the prisoners to hard labor while they're in prison apparently was an age-old custom. And he says, he quotes two psukim from, I believe it's Parshas Bo. One pasuk says, in the context of Makas Bechoros, right? So it is Parshas Bo. And the Torah tells us, "Umeis kol b'chor b'yaretz Mitzrayim b'chor paro yoshev akiso ad b'chor ha-shivcha." Right, that all the Bechoros died in Eretz Mitzrayim, from the Bechor of Paro sitting on his throne to the Bechor of the Shivcha. Listen to these words: Asher Achar Harechayim, the Shivcha that's behind the mill. Asher Achar Harechayim, the Chol Bechor Behema. What's Asher Achar Harechayim? We never pay attention to those words, right? Says the Radak, the Pshat is that we're talking about someone who was a prisoner. We're going from the highest to the lowest, from Paro, right, who was sitting on his throne, down to the lowly prisoner, Asher Achar HaRechayim, who's busy grinding in prison, because that's what they do, they subject them to this hard labor. Right? He says, that's the pshat in the pasuk, Asher Achar HaRechayim. And later, in Perek Yud Beis, when the Torah also describes Makas Bechoros, it says this, a similar language, Mibuchor Paro Yoshev Akiso, Ad Bechor Ashvi, Asher Beveis Habor. Right? So you see from this pasuk that we're talking about a captive, we're talking about a prisoner. So he connects these two psukim, and he says that probably what we're talking about is that in prison, they had this custom of subjecting everyone to hard labor, and that's exactly what was being done with Shimshon here. There is a very interesting and strange medrash, which I'll just mention. It's a Gemara, Chazal mentioned it. It's strange, and it's not just me saying that it's strange, but Rashi and the Radak also say it's strange. If you take a look, if you have Rashi, I think it's Rashi. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says Vayhi Tochen, right? If you have the Rashi there, Vayhi Tochen in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Berechai Melacha Kiveda. That's the Pasuk Pshat that they subjected him to this difficult work. And then Rashi says V'Rabbi Oseinu Pirshu Masha Pirshu. He says, well, you know, the rabbis explained what they explained, and he leaves it at that. Okay. So you don't have the Radak. In this edition, they don't have the Radak. But if you have the Radak, so the Radak quotes the Medrash, and then I looked it up in the Gemara. It's the Gemara in Sotah and Daf Yud. The Medrash says that people, that Tochen here doesn't... Tochen means he was involved in Avera. And it brings a Pasuk that implies, another Pasuk in Tanakh, that implies that the language of Tochen is Avera, that people would bring their wives to Shimshon to impregnate. Right, they all brought their wives to Shimshon, that Shimshon should get their wives pregnant. Why? Because they felt, genes. Let's get the good gene pool, right? Shimshon is this mighty warrior, he's superhuman strength. So let's say, you know, let's get some kids here with Shimshon's genes and get them, you know, and they'll be all very strong. The Radak says it's a very strange medrash, because if you think about it, says the Radak, that he had no strength anymore, right? He was weakened. So, you know, what kind of business is this? That now these kids, you know, the women are going to get pregnant by him, and now all the kids are going to have the strength. He doesn't even have the strength anymore.
Did he have kids?
We don't know. I don't know. Pesukim don't describe if he had kids or not. But so the Radak says, I don't really understand the Medrash. He says Chazal said it, so that's a Medrash, but I don't really understand it. The Al-Sheikh suggests that maybe Shimshon was not impregnating these women, but the Al-Sheikh suggests that sometimes if you look in different Gemaras and things like that, so it says that what a person is looking at or thinking about during the time that they are intimate with their spouse, that can affect their offspring, right? Different Sfarim talk about this, that a person is supposed to have very holy thoughts, that it could affect, you know, it could have holy children, things like that. So the Al-Sheikh says that maybe the couples would come to the prison and they would look at Shimshon, and then they would go and have relations, and the woman would become pregnant, and by her looking at Shimshon, maybe they felt that that would have a good hashpah on the kids. You know, not that Shimshon was actually, you know, impregnating these women, but that, you know, the husbands were and the wives were being together, but, you know, but the, just the looking at Shimshon would somehow affect the children. Whatever the pshat is, but you see clearly that according to the Medrash, that the Plishtim were still enamored by Shimshon, right? That even after his strength had dissipated, you know, due to this, you know, the shaving of his head, but they were still very enamored by him, according to this Medrash, you know, exactly however you understand it, they were still very intrigued by his strength. Okay, now Pasuk Chav Beis, very important Pasuk. It's short, but it's important. Pasuk Chav Beis, Vayochel se'aro sho litzameach ka'asher gulach. Okay, now he's in jail. All of a sudden the Pasuk says that his hair begins to grow back. His hair begins to grow back, just like it was shaved off, his hair begins to grow back. Now the Malbim points out here that the Pasuk must mean that the hair grew back miraculously fast. Right? We're not talking about the hair just grew back naturally. He says, because listen, he says, how foolish could the Plishtim be? If they knew that his strength was due to his hair, right? So then every day they would come along and shave his head and make sure that he's still weak, right? So says the Malbim, of course they were doing that. But what this means is that his hair was growing back abnormally fast. So maybe they were coming back once a week, you know, to shave his head. But in the meantime, in that week, his hair was growing back very fast, very quickly. Okay? Now, obviously, says if we work with the pshat of Rav Avram ben Arambam that we talked about earlier, that again, the hair is symbolic. The hair is not the real source of strength. The hair is symbolic. So says Rav Avram ben Arambam, what does this symbolize? The fact that his hair is now growing back, it symbolizes his tshuva, it symbolizes his reconnection with Hashem. And in jail, you know, you think about it, what else does a person think about all day in jail? He's probably thinking about, well, what do I get myself into? Look what I did to myself. I went after my yitzhar hara, I strayed after my eyes, I went with these plishti women, and look how I ended up. Right? I got no eyes, I'm in jail, I'm grinding this big mill here, right? No, so what do you do in jail? You do tshuva. Right, you have all these stories. The people in jail, they get very religious, right? They read the Bible. They want Bible books. You know why? Nothing else to do in jail. So you think a lot, right? So you think a lot of it about the fact that your life stinks and you're stuck in this jail. And now you know maybe I should become a better person. So says, I'm sorry.
His vision returned.
Well, his eyes were gone. I think they gouged him out.
I don't think he could
ever see again. Okay, so the pus. So continues the pasuk chav gimel. V'sarnei plishtim, now here also this is very important. V'sarnei plishtim ne'esfu lizboach zevach gadol ledagon Eloheihem ulesimcha. So now, says the Pasuk, the plishtim made a party. They made a big party. Why? Because Shimshon was their arch nemesis. Shimshon was the enemy who kept coming in and destroying people and killing people, burning their fields, all the things we read about. Finally, the guy's defeated. He's weak. Then we gouge out his eyes. He's shackled in a prison down in Gaza. This is amazing. So they throw a party. Not just any party, but they start throwing a party to who? To their god. Dagon. That was the name of their god. Right? And they're sacrificing to Dagon. Ula Simcha. Pasuk adds, and it was also a party. It was also for their own enjoyment. But they were sacrificing to their gods, and they were enjoying themselves. Vayomrenu. And what were they saying? Nasan Eloheinu biyadeinu. That our gods gave him into our hands as Shimshon Oyveinu. Our gods gave Shimshon, our enemy, into our hands. You know, so they're bringing these sacrifices. The Malbim points out who's bringing the sacrifices, who's leading it here? The Sarnei Plishtim. Right? These same officers, these were the officers that were responsible for bribing Delilah, for getting the information, for finally capturing him. These were the ones that were offering the sacrifices. Vayiru Oso Ha'am. The people saw him. Says in Mitzudas David, they saw him in jail from afar. I guess people, you know, they looked out and they see him in jail. He's in the jail grounds, you know, shackled. And they see and they say, oh my gosh, it's Shimshon. So they're not bringing sacrifices, says the Malbim, but they start singing Hallel. They start praising their gods. Ki Omru, Nosan Eloheinu biyadeinu v'soyveinu. Again, the same type of thing, right? That our gods gave our enemy into our hands. Ve'is machriv artzeinu. And the one who destroyed our land. Keep in mind, says the Malbim, that they have 3 points that they're praising God for here. They're praising their gods, right? 3 points that they're praising their gods about. Number one, Kinasan Eloheinu Biyadeinu Esayveinu. Number one, he was our enemy, and our gods gave him into our hands. That's number one. Number two, Veis Machriv Artzeinu. He destroyed our property. Remember what he did, right? Shimshon burned down all the fields of the Plishtim. So that's number two. And number three, Va'asher Hirba Eschalaleinu. He also killed many people. Remember, Shimshon killed a lot of Plishtim, right? So they say, number one, he was our enemy. Number two, he destroyed our fields. Number three, he killed a lot of our friends. And finally, this guy is taken, and they're all singing and dancing to their gods. The officers are sacrificing to the gods. The people are just, you know, singing and praising to their gods. And this is, you know, again, the psukim don't allude to this, but the mefarshim say, this is beginning to rub Shimshon in the wrong way. He sees what's, I'm sorry, he doesn't see. He can't see, but he hears. He hears what's going on. He hears the parties. He hears the throngs of people and the mobs, you know, all cheering and talking about how great their God is and how the Jews, you know, have been captured and their enemies are defeated. Vayihi kitov libam, and finally when their hearts were good, right? Kitov lev amelech bayayin, right? They're partying, okay, right? And when they're truly happy, you know, they're in a good place now. Vayomru, and they say, Kiru l'Shimshon, call Shimshon, vayisachek l'adam, and let him entertain us. Let him entertain us. Vayikru l'Shimshon mibeis ha'asun. What's he entertaining, right? So the Mitzvah Asdavit says, they want him to tell the stories of his might. They want him to tell the stories of how he ripped apart the lion and how he defeated the Plishtim with the jawbone of the donkey and all these things. Why? Because that shows how much they've accomplished. Look at this. Look how strong you used to be, Shimshon. Tell us all about your history. How strong you used to be, and look at you now, right? A poor prisoner, shackled, powerless. You know, that's what they wanted. Vayikru l'Shimshon mibeis ha'asurim, so they call him from jail. Vayitzachek lifneihem, and he entertains before them. Vayamidu oso bein ha'amudim, and they place him in this big, you know, in this big area, this big arena between the pillars. They place him right there in the middle. Everybody's around watching, and he's entertaining them with his stories. He's telling them, you know, the stories. The Ralbag says that the reason why they wanted everyone to see him and to recognize how great their gods were. That's what they wanted. Right? This was like a religious event. You know, it was like a Kiruv event. Right? Look how great our gods were. Look what our gods did. This was our enemy. This was the guy who destroyed our fields. This was the guy who killed so many Plishtim. And look where he is now. Look what our gods, look how great our gods are. Look at everything that they've done. The Malbim points out that if you look at the Pasuk, it says, Vayisachek lanu, with a sin. Right, first, Kiru l'Shimshon vayisachek lanu, with a sin, and then at the end of the pasuk it says, "What did he do?" Vayitzachek lifneihem, with a tzadi. So what's the difference? Well, he's doing it here. Vayitzachek means Shimshon is doing it. So what's the difference between vayisachek with a samech and vayitzachek with a tzadi? So the Malbim says that with a sin implies that not only are the people entertained, but the person who's doing it is also very happy and in a good mood and entertained, right? So you have a comedian who, you know, finds himself funny. So he's making jokes and everybody else is entertained and he's also having a good time. Vayitzachek with a tzadi is when you're doing something to entertain others, but you're not laughing, right? You're not feeling the joy. You're not feeling the happiness. You're not laughing. So that's why they called him and they said, hey, you know, entertain for us. But at the end, what did he do? Vayitzachek lifneihem. He entertained them. That's what he had to do. He didn't have a choice. He was a prisoner, right? But he didn't do it. He wasn't feeling very happy. He was feeling very sad and very forlorn. And again, you know, the Mefarshim focus on the fact that all these the praises of their gods and the exclamations of how great their gods are, all this is grating on Shimshon's ears. Because remember, Shimshon was a Nazir Elokim Mibetin, right? He was a person who was totally dedicated to Hashem. So he messed up a few times. Right, he strayed from Hashem. He messed up. He botched certain things. But at the end of the day, he was still a holy person. He was still a person who felt very close to the Ribono Shel Olam. And now all he's hearing, the officers are sacrificing, and the people are praising God and praising their gods. And that's all he's hearing, and it's grating on his ears. Vayomer Shimshon El Hanar Hamachzik Biyado. So the Mitzudah Asdavid said because he was blind, so they gave a little kid to like take his hand and to bring him around. He couldn't see anywhere. So Shimshon tells this boy that's holding his hands, Hanicha Osi. He says, do me a favor, let go of me for a couple of minutes. V'hamisheni es ha'amudim asher habayis nachon aleihem v'isha'ein aleihem. Right, and let me feel the pillars. Let me touch the pillars that that's supporting this structure, that's supporting this this building. Allow me to feel the pillars. Now, we all know where this is going, because this part is famous. Right, but this kid had no clue. He didn't know what Shimshon had planned. Now, Pasuk Chav Zayin, v'habayis molei ha'anoshim v'hanoshim. And this place was full. The arena was full of men and women. V'shama kol sarni plishtim. All of the officers of the plishtim were here. Right? Again, we don't know exactly the number, but we see a number in a minute. V'al ha'gag kishloshes alafim ish. V'isha haroim v'schok shimshon. And on the roof, there were 3,000 people watching, men and women watching this spectacle. So you can imagine there were thousands of people here. If even on the roof there were 3,000 people, imagine how many people were in the building, right, who could actually see. But we're talking about thousands of people packed in here, plishtim, men, women, probably children also, packed in to watch this spectacle of the great Jewish warrior, right, who's been now subdued and is now a lowly, weak prisoner. Pasuk Chav Ches, Vayikra Shimshon El Hashem. So Shimshon, in his last moment of strength, turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and calls out to Hashem. Vayomer Hashem, Hashem, right? Hashem Elokim. Zochreinina. So he says, Hashem, remember me. V'chazkeinina. And give me strength. Achapam hazeh. Ha'elokim. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me strength this one last time. Right, one last time, give me strength. The nokma nekam achas mishtei einai miplishtim, and let me avenge one of my eyes from the plishtim. Let me avenge one of my eyes from the plishtim. Now, the Mitzudas David understands, because what does this mean? One of my eyes. It's a very strange thing. Right? What do you mean, one of my eyes? So Mitzudas David said he doesn't mean one of my eyes. He means that because they gouged out my eyes, allow me to avenge one last time. Give me one last battle, right? Let me fight one last time, fight against these plishtim because of what they did to me, because they gouged out my two eyes. But Rashi, and many of the other Mefarshim understand, based on Chazal, that no, he meant only one eye, right? Meaning, let me avenge one of my eyes. Why? Because he said, the other eye, I'm holding off for Olam Haba, right? I'm holding off, meaning that there was a certain amount of schar that he got because of the pain that he endured. So he said, part of that pain, for one of the eyes, let me cash that in right now, right? I'm asking to cash that in now to get a schus, to get a merit that I'll be strong enough to do what I'm about to do. That's right now, but I want to save part of that investment for Olam Haba. The other eye, I want to save for that schar, that investment. I want to save for Olam Haba.
He knew his hair grew back already at this point.
So again, apparently, even though his hair was beginning to grow back, which again, according to Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam, implies a little bit of a reconnection. That relationship between him and Hashem, but he still needed to daven. He still needed a schus. It wasn't as easy as it used to be that just, he had this superhuman strength and Hashem was with him. Right? He had to daven and ask Hashem to give him this last burst of strength. Right, well, yeah. Last burst of strength. Pasuk Chavtes, Vayilfos Shimshon es Shnei Amudei HaTovech Asher Abayis Nachon Aleihem. So Shimshon takes these two pillars, right? He takes these two pillars with his hands. Vayisameich aleihem echad bimino v'echad bismalo. He leans on the pillars, one with his right hand, one with his left hand. Okay? The Malbim says also, if you look at the words here, it says vayisameich. He says, if you look, and again, the Malbim also is always very sensitive to the words. At the end of Pasuk Chavav, what does he tell the kid? Ve'esha'ein. What's the difference between ve'esha'ein and vayisameich? Says the Malbim, Ve'esha'ein means I'll lean on it slightly. He didn't want the kid to be alarmed. He didn't want the kid to be suspicious. So he says, let me just lean a little bit on these pillars. What did he do? But in reality, he leaned with all of his strength to break the pillars. That's really what he was doing. He didn't want to alarm the child. Okay, so he did it with all of his strength. Vayisameich, right? Aleim echad b'mino v'echad b'smolo. He takes these pillars. Pasuk lamed vayomer Shimshon. And Shimshon says right before he breaks the pillars, listen to this, unbelievable. Tamos nafshi im plishtim. He says, let me die with the plishtim. Let me die with the plishtim. Vayet b'choach vayipol habayis al hasronim v'al kol ha'am. And he pushes with strength and breaks the pillars and this whole arena. Think about it. 3,000 people on the roof, right? So you can imagine he took out the pillars that were supporting the roof. Now the weight, not just of the roof, but of 3,000 people come crashing down on everyone else that's there, right? He kills everybody. He said in that 1 minute, he killed more people, more plishtim, than he killed throughout his entire lifetime. And he killed a lot of plishtim during his lifetime, right? But thousands upon thousands he killed in that 1 minute with that building, you know, collapsing. The Mitzudas David, you know, says, you know, what's this? Tamos nafshi im plishtim. Tamos nafshi im plishtim. I want them to die. So the Mitzudas David says, I want these plishtim to die so badly because of what they did to me and because of what they did to the Jewish people. I want them to die so badly that I'm willing to go down with them. I'm willing to die with them, right? And it's interesting because you look at the classic Mefarshim, so they don't discuss how is he allowed to do this. You know, we're not allowed to commit suicide. So how are you allowed to commit suicide? How is he? He knew he was going to die, didn't he? Right? I mean, the whole building's coming down. And he's standing in the middle of the building. Right? So didn't he know that he was going to die? You know, how is he allowed to do this? So I saw again on the bottom of the article they quote a couple of different interpretations. So one is the Ralbag. I think it's from the end. There's a long, long Ralbag at the end of the Perek. So the Ralbag says that he was so troubled by the desecration of Hashem's name that throughout this whole time, the officers were sacrificing to their gods and the people were praising and singing to their gods. And here in this arena, they're all mocking him and jeering him and praising, and look how great our gods are. And then look what they did, that they gave Shimshon, you know, into our hands. That he was so bothered by this. He was so bothered by this. And he knew that he was not deserving of a miracle to kill a plishtim and that would spare him. That would take too much of a miracle. To kill a plishtim and spare him, he knew he wasn't deserving of that. But he didn't have a choice. This wasn't like a decision that he made. I can't tolerate the chil shem shamayim. I can't tolerate this chil Hashem. And there's no way for me to take action against this and survive. I have no choice. And it was almost like, you know, it was almost like he didn't have a choice. Of course, we can't decide to commit suicide. But because he was so bothered by the chilul shem shamayim, he was so bothered by the desecration of Hashem's name, that he felt he didn't have a choice. And if I'm going to die, I'm going to die, but I can't, this has to stop. You know, the chilul shem shamayim has to stop. It can't continue like this. And he just did it, and whatever comes will come, whatever happens to me will happen to me, and of course he died. You know, that's how the Ralbag understands it. The Preet Tzaddik also, he quotes the Preet Tzaddik, Reb Tzaddik HaKohen. So he quotes it also that he was willing to lose everything. A person who commits suicide loses his chelek and olam haba. He was willing to lose his chelek and olam haba. And that's why, what does the Pasuk say? Vayomer Shimshon Tamos Nafshi, my nefesh, should be killed. Meaning, not just my body in this world will die. Even my nefesh in the world to come. Right? Even my sheir and olam haba will be erased because of what I'm about to do, but I have no choice. Again, because of the desecration of Hashem's name, because of the chil shem shemaim, I have no choice, and I'm willing to forego even my chelek and olam haba, right? Because of this.
You want to do what I call haba?
Well, what? Those two pshatim don't work together, right? Right, exactly. And they suggest another interpretation. It must be just the editors or the rabbis who put together the commentary. But they say that maybe he wasn't committing suicide. Why? Because a normal person naturally can't knock down a building by pushing on the pillars. So if this were to work, right? Meaning he tried to do it, but if this were to work, this is a miracle. This is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to work, that's his decision. Right? Meaning I'm going to push. According to the laws of nature, me pushing against the pillars of the building is not going to do anything. Right? So if Hashem wants to change the laws of nature and allow me to break these pillars and bring the whole building down, and I'm going to come down with the building, that's his decision. I'm putting it in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. You know? So that way he wasn't committing suicide, because what he was doing was, you know, anybody, you know, it's like the car's parked, you walk in front of it, nothing's going to happen to you, right? If the laws of nature change, so they change. But that's not my doing. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision. So he put it in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands, which I thought was a creative approach. Okay, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, let's conclude the Perek. Vayirdu Echav V'chobes Avihu. So his brothers and the entire house of his father come down. Vayisu Oso. And they come and they carry his body out of this wreckage, right, out of the debris of this building. Vayalu Vayikmeru Oso Bein Sara Uvein Eshta'o. And they take him and they bury him between these two places, Tzara Neshta'ol, Bekever Manoach Aviv, in the grave, right next to Manoach, his father. V'hu Shafat Es Yisrael Esrim Shana, and he judged the Jewish people for 20 years. It's a big nace almost that he was able to be buried. I think on the Art Scroll also they say that, you know, the Plishtim didn't touch his body. They could have desecrated the body after Shimshon did this. But they didn't touch his body. That was also part of the miracle from Hashem that they enabled him to be zochet to a kvuras Yisrael. And the Radak says, we mentioned this before, that why does it repeat here v'hu shafatis Yisrael esrim shana? We already learned at the end of the last parak, it says the same thing. At the end of parak tesvav, what does it say? Vayishmo des Yisrael b'mei plishtim esrim shana. So why does it repeat it? So the Radak says, and we mentioned this at the beginning of the parak, the Radak says because the end of the last parak was really the end. That was the beginning of the end. Right? That was the beginning of the end of Shimshon. He really judged for 20 years. This whole parak was his downfall. Right? From the very first pasuk where he goes after the Zona, again, whatever that means we discussed last week, but this was all his downfall, this parak. And the first parak he was on a high, and then already this was his downfall. The lesson, part of the lesson I heard in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner suggested that maybe part of the lesson here of Shimshon is that Shimshon, his mistake was that, you know, he got a little bit too involved. I mean, there's a lot more to this, which we don't have time to develop now. But he got a little too involved with his taiva, and he thought that he would be able to kind of defeat the plishtim from the inside, so to speak. You know, to get very close to the averos, to get very close to the tumah, and to then uproot it from the inside. Right, you know, it's almost like they had like these disco rabbis, right? Who go into the disco and they do kiruv at the disco, right? So you know you're going down into the tumah, and that's where you're trying to uproot the enemy and to save it. And he was a little too confident of his ability to do that. He was a little too confident that he can get that close to the fire and not get burned. And the lesson is that even Shimshon, who was a Nazir Elokim, and he had the divine assistance, he had HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence with him. Even he eventually got scorched by the fire. You can't get that close to the fire and not get burned. You can't get that close to Averos, to these women, to the Plishti women, you know, be constantly that close and think, I'm a big tzaddik, nothing's going to happen, I'm just doing this for the right reason, everything's going to be good. Even Shimshon was a tzaddik, he was a tzaddik, we see at the end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him back that miraculous strength at the end, he was still a tzaddik, right? But his downfall was that he was a little too confident, and he was a little too, you know, a little too sure of himself that he'll be able to get close to the fire and not be burned. And the lesson to all of us is how careful we have to be. That we, you know, we who are not on the level of Shimshon HaTzadik, you know, not to get that close to the fire, not to get burned. Shimshon is the last of the Shoftim proper. There's still a couple Prakim left in Sefer Shoftim. A few Prakim left. So we'll learn the last few Prakim. But we'll see that Shimshon is really the end of the Shoftim. And then we'll learn, you know, eventually about Eli and Shmuel, but a couple more tragic stories, unfortunately, at the end of Sefer Shoftim.